Stephanie Miller here. Check out Your Money Matters with Mark Perlman. Entertaining, informative, and coming up at 8 on A New Voice, A New Choice, AM 1520.
Welcome to Your Money Matters. Get answers to everyday financial questions from buying cars to selling homes and everything in between. Your host, Mark Perlman, is a noted author and financial specialist dedicated to helping you deal with the financial decisions you make each and every day. Mark Perlman is a registered representative of and offers securities through Securities America Incorporated, member FINRA and SIPC. And now here's Mark Perlman with this week's edition of Your Money Matters.
Welcome to this week's edition of Your Money Matters. I am your host, Mark Perlman, and you are listening to the show about everyday finance for everyday people. If it's got anything to do with money, you know we're going to talk about it right here on this show. As you may know, Your Money Matters is heard in up to 19 states, and as well as this show is featured on iTunes Radio Network, where it happens to be one of the more popular finance shows. It also happens to be a staff favorite. So there's a lot of ways that people are hearing this show. And as we like to mention each and every week, we're glad, no matter how you're hearing it, we're glad that you're here with us. So, also, and I forget this almost every week, and I get reminded, show is also rebroadcast on the world's largest internet hub, live365.com, where all the shows are rebroadcast for your listening pleasure. Also happen to be an editor's favorite over there as well, so live365.com, another way to hear the show. And, of course, if you miss it over the traditional airwaves and every other way, you can always just go to the show website, which is yourmoneymattersradio.com, and you can listen every show we have by just going there. All right, let's jump to the mailbag and read some of your questions. This is a great question right here. Mark, I am buying a car and wonder why the rates for a new car are so much better for a new car than a used one. I want used, but the rates are so, with like seven O's after it, much higher. And that's from Christine in Woonsocket, Rhode Island. And that's a very interesting question, Christine, and I have a very simple answer for that. The rates are lower on new cars because the industry is trying to dissuade people from buying used cars. That's one of the tools that they'll use, and that's really just how the machine works. And, I mean, you could see yourself that it's working because you're sitting there questioning it. Now, all that stuff is an aside. You know, there could be some factors for your own specific situation why your rate might be much higher. Credit could be an issue. I don't know anything about you or your credit, but that could be an issue. And also, some places, they jack up the rate so they can make a few points on it, too. So there's a lot of different things that could enter into it. But by and large, new cars will have lower rates. And again, it's a tool the industry uses to push new cars. So I hope that answers that question. Here is one from Helen G. Helen did not say where she's from, but sent us this. Mark, looking at buying savings bonds for my grandchildren, but don't know if there's something better out there. By the way, my husband and I love your show. Thanks. Well, thank you, Helen. Here's my opinion on this. Savings bonds, they're clearly an option. They're easy to buy, and a lot of people do it. But depending on the age of your grandchildren and, you know, when they might need the cash and those things, I personally believe there's much better things out there. One of the suggestions I would throw out to you is take a look at some of the dividend reinvestment plans that are out there. Basically, what you can do is you can buy stock from specific companies, and they make for nice gifts too. Because what you can do is you can have one of these plans set up, and then on birthdays or holidays or different occasions, whatever it might be, if you wanted to, you could add to those accounts and create something for your grandkids. So that would be my suggestion. Of course, you could just give good old hard cash, but odds are that'll probably turn into a video game somewhere along the line. So maybe your idea or my suggestion might work. Hope that helps. All right, one last one from Al C., Ridgefield, Connecticut. Mark, just a comment. I think the shows you did on trading were great, and both you and the experts hit the nail right on the head in your observations. Been a trader for over 20 years, and I wish I heard some of the advice 20 years ago. Well, my friend, you might have heard the advice 20 years ago, but you certainly wouldn't have gotten it from me, because 20 years ago I was still trying to learn the rules of the game, and it took me many, many years to learn the rules. So, but I hear you. 20 years ago, I wish I had gotten that advice too. I guess that's just the way it is. Anyway, great questions as always. I always invite people to write in with your thoughts or questions, comments. You can send those to question@yourmoneymattersradio.com, or you can just hop onto the site, and there's a nice, easy form for you to fill out. All right, let's take a quick pause here and listen to what's going on in the U.S. stock markets. Take it away, James.
Hey, Mark, thank you. Here's the Sunday stock setup report for December 19th, 2010. Last week, we had VRSN as a buyable breakout on the bullish action it had on that previous Friday. This week, VRSN had another buyable breakout on Wednesday as it advanced to a new 29-month high while trading 3.5 times its normal volume. Support is now at the previous base and the tightly trailing 50-day moving average. A break below those levels would be a serious concern. Follow VSRN and all of our other stock setups at SundayStockSetupReport.com. I'm James T. Mark, back to you.
All right, James, thanks for those words. All right, well, today we're going to talk about how to develop the prosperity mindset. For people who've been listening to the show or know really anything about me, you know I am a huge proponent when it comes to the mental aspects of building wealth and doing those kinds of things, because it is incredibly important, and your mindset is the key component to that. As many people may know, I am the author of The Positive Money Mindset, which is available on Amazon, which talks about some of the things that today and our guest, Randy Gage, who's an expert in prosperity, has been doing it for a long, long time. He breathes it, lives it, and his message has been delivered to millions of people. As I said, prosperity expert Randy Gage is with us today. Interesting story, interesting guy. He rose basically from a jail cell as a teen to become a self-made multimillionaire. He's inspired, like I said, millions of people around the world. He himself has authored 8 books on success, including one of his, which is The Prosperity Mind and Accept Your Abundance. It's been translated into more than 25 languages, sold millions of copies. And we're very fortunate to have Randy here with us today, because people have heard me say this on the show before. We could bring in 10 different people, all highly skilled and knowledgeable in what they do. But, you know, what resonates with one person may not resonate with someone else. The timing might not be right. There's a whole host of things that can come into how well somebody might receive it. But, you know, Randy's been doing this a long time. He's been working with people all over the world. So, obviously, we're lucky to have him here. So, welcome to the show, Randy.
Hey, Mark. It's great to be on.
Hey, thanks, man. All right, so, you know, one of the things that I think is interesting, and, you know, you talk about how people, and you coin it as mind viruses, which I think is an interesting way to put it, that hold people back from prosperity. Why don't you give us kind of the bullet points of what you call that, you know, specifically, and, you know, why that's affecting so many people out there?
Yeah, it's a fascinating subject. First, to come up with Richard Dawkins in his book, he talked about this, I think the book was called The Selfish Gene, and he was talking about DNA and genes. And he talked about memes, M-E-M-E, or the science of memetics. And really, the old said, you get viruses on your mind, in your subconscious mind, just like you get on your hard drive in your computer or your laptop. And these mind viruses can be something simple, you know, take catchy things, whether it's Just Do It or Where's the Beef. It could be a song you hear on the radio. These mind viruses parasitize the host and cause you to replicate the virus. So just like a catchy jingle or song, you get mind viruses. And mind viruses are very prevalent in the world. And the more emotional they are, the more they replicate. And, of course, with all the work you've done on behavioral issues around money, you would really see this. Mind viruses about money, really emotional, really prevalent. If we took some of the most common ones, you know, money is bad, rich people are evil, it's spiritual to be poor, or it's noble to be poor, these get just infected on your hard drive of your subconscious mind. And as you know, Mark, when you get something in your subconscious mind, you just program. You just go ahead and act to make that happen. You don't. Your subconscious mind doesn't analyze. It doesn't critique. It doesn't rationalize. It just does whatever it's programmed to do. And in the case of most people, what that programming is, okay, rich people are evil, or you've got to sell your soul for money. So the actions that your subconscious mind takes is to say, well, let me sabotage myself.
That's exactly right.
I don't want to be an evil person. person. I don't want to be a bad person. So let me just sabotage myself so I'm still a good person.
Yeah, that, you know, it's amazing because so much, and I really want to get your take on this, but so much in my opinion, my work, my experience, is that things, well, let me back up for a second. Number one, I think a lot of this is counterintuitive, where it's exactly what you're talking about. I've never used the word mind virus, but I love it. I think it's great. I might use it from now on, and I'll give you full credit. But seriously, it's great because that's exactly how I see that that we end up off task, and we end up going in a direction, and we don't really understand why. That's number one, I guess. Number two, and I think this is a huge, huge thing when it comes to prosperity financially, or, you know, I mean, some people, you know, people do some very noble things and are very prosperous, and it just doesn't necessarily translate into money, and that doesn't necessarily, you know, have to be a measure of success. You know, I think of, you know, firefighters, for example. You know, they don't get paid a lot of money to do what they do, but you know, pretty successful in their own realm. So, and teachers are another one. But here's the thing that I find, and I really want to get your opinion on this, that I think is a mind virus, is people feel that if they attain a level of prosperity that's above what they're used to or above what they've kind of experienced, that they're going to lose a part of their life. And here's what I mean by that. Let's say you and I are friends and, you know, we grow up in the same circle and we live in middle America kind of thing. And all of a sudden, you know, and we've got a dozen other friends that are in the same situation. Well, now you know, Randy Gage get to a position where maybe you can live in a nicer home if you chose to, or drive fancier cars, or belong to country clubs, or travel, or do things that the other people in your sphere cannot financially do. And I think that some people look at that and say, well, I don't want to give up that, so I'm going to turn down, you know, this path. Have you experienced that? Have you seen people do that? Any thoughts on that?
Oh, huge, many, many, many thoughts on that, Mark.
Good.
Because, again, I don't think anybody does that consciously. Nobody says, well, I'm going to turn down this promotion because then my friends won't like me, or I'm going to move to a bigger house and then they're going to think I'm stuck up. But subconsciously, the first time you start to make more money than your parents, most people idolize their parents. So you, let's say you were raised in, you know, Virginia, and your father was a coal miner, right? And he's down there getting black lung, coughing every day, work. And you know, and he works hard, saves money, and gets enough for you to go to college. And now you come out of college, and some company offers you a job and a company car and a health plan, and you're working in an office, and your subconscious mind, you're thinking of your father, who's the salt of the earth, who raised you, and he makes, whatever, $30,000 a year, and you're going to start coming out of college at $35,000? You feel so guilty, and you don't even know that. You sabotage that.
Yeah.
And you made a great point about the friends. I mean, we're all in our comfort zone. We're all surrounded by these friends and family. And, of course, they're all programming us with mind viruses because we get them everywhere, TV, radio, Internet, movies, friends, email, you know, 24 hours a day. And nobody wants to be thought of as that they left all their friends and they moved up and left them behind. And it does cause millions of people to sabotage their behavior because it takes them out of their comfort zone. Jim Rohn famously said, "You will be the average income of the five people you spend the most time with." And what happens if you become really wealthy? You're hanging around with a different five people, I guarantee you. Otherwise, you're going to end up getting back to that average again. And that's very scary on a subconscious level. You don't even know it's there. You don't even know you're doing it. But the idea that you're going to leave behind your friends and family, leave behind your loved ones, and you're going to be wealthy and successful and live, like you say, in a better house, drive nicer cars, have better vacations, very scary to a lot of people. They don't even know it. And, yeah, it causes them to sabotage.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have one more thought on that hopefully will help you, but I want to get your opinion on it too. Absolutely agree with every answer you gave, 100%. And here's the advice that I throw out there to people, or not even advice, you know, it's just kind of a thought, I guess. You know, I don't really like to tell people what to do. I just throw out thoughts, and if people like it, then great. But, you know, if you took the opposite side of that, where you said, you know what, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and you consciously thought about this, because you're absolutely right, the subconscious is what's going to move your decisions. But if you consciously said, you know what, I'm going to do what's best for me, and that's a tough thing too, because, and I know you've got a lot of thoughts and opinions on this, because when people say that, it's kind of like, it sounds like you're being selfish, but it's really not, and I think we're going to break that down. But you say, you know what, I'm going to do what's best for me, and we'll kind of see where the chips fall. When you talk about the friends and the family, your true friends, the people who truly care about you and your family, they'll be thrilled. They might not be able to go on the vacations you go on, and they might not be able to do some of the financially some of the things if you hit the successes. Like I said, you know, if you happen to be a professional athlete, your best friend is a you know, a school teacher. I mean, you just can't compete financially. But I would offer that a lot of times that rift could be coming from the other side. And it doesn't have to come from you, where people are jealous and those things are out there. And it's out there. I mean, it's very simple. It's out there. But I think that, you know, you can learn a lot sometimes when you take a look at, you know, how people might be treating you, because you might be the exact same person. You've achieved some different things, and you might even be a more complete person. But if people resent you or find flaws in that, my suggestion to you is maybe you ought to look at those people, because maybe they're the ones with the issue and not you. Your thoughts on that, Randy?
Two things jump out, Mark. Number one, here'd be the first thing is, will people say, wow, are there people out there now who say, well, you know, Randy is different. You know, he used to be different when he was poor. He's a different guy when he's rich. My answer would be, yeah, that's why I'm rich, because I had to become a different kind of person to become wealthy, because I spent the first 30-some years of my life as a broke, unhappy, unhealthy guy, and I thought like a broke, unhappy, unhealthy person. And everyone has to realize that poor people think differently than wealthy people do. Healthy people think differently than sick people do. Happy people think differently than unhappy or depressed people do. That's a physiological fact. So you do have to change your thinking if you want to change your results. So when people say, well, yeah, he's not the same guy he was, well, guilty as charged, and that's why I'm wealthy now. And so there is some truth to that. But it wasn't that I wanted to leave my friends behind.
Right,
and
right.
They have the same opportunities I do, and I want all of my friends to be as healthy, happy, and wealthy as I am.
You know,
but
it's
that's
interesting.
The choice they have to make.
You're absolutely right. It's interesting. Someone had made a comment to me not too long ago, and they said, you know, we were talking about something, and they just said, well, you know, I just don't have time. And I let me rephrase that. I used to, at one point, argue that point. I don't anymore. I don't have any comment. But my comment to myself is, I have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's the time I have. I don't know anybody else who's got more, to be honest with you. You know, if someone could invent more time, then great. So when you hear people say that, I think that that's just a rationalization, and that enters into the prosperity mindset. And but I want to get some more details on your story, because I think it's going to resonate with a lot of people. But before we get to that, for the people who might just tuning in here, you are listening to Your Money Matters. Say that each week, but you know what you're listening to. And I am your host, Mark Perlman. You probably know that, too. Anyway, show's heard in up to 19 states as well as worldwide, thanks to our partners over at iTunes, where this show continues to be a staff favorite. And we are speaking with well-known prosperity expert Randy Gage. Interesting guy, interesting story, and he's got a lot of knowledge to share, and he's sharing it with us. For more information about Randy, go visit yourmoneymattersradio.com, and there'll be all kinds of information there about Randy. As well as, if you want, you can go sign up for the newsletter, which I encourage people to do, too. We don't hassle people, because I can't stand when I get hassled. But, you know, I don't know, once a month, maybe twice a month, something along those lines, we send in a newsletter with what's going on in the wonderful world. So that's all there for you. Randy, your story is interesting, and I think it's great on a lot of levels, because I think – a couple things, and we'll probably get through this through the show. One is I think that the game, if you will, is somewhat rigged where socially the pressures and the way we're kind of led like cattle to think, well, you do well in school, you go to the best school you can get or you can get into, then you go out and you get a job, and, you know, that's kind of the way it goes. And, you know, you have two kids and a dog. And, you know, I mean, that's just kind of, I think that that's just kind of a society's thing. And it doesn't have to be that way at all. And you're living proof. And I've worked with some people that have similar stories to yours. And it's very interesting because when you listen to, you know, people such as yourself and some of these other people think they've taken a different path and they've proven that it can be done. So, you know, the message I throw out there to people is there's not any one path. There's many, many paths. However, I think that there are similarities in mindsets and in beliefs and different things that cross the different paths. And, you know, so regardless of what path you're on, if you share some of these qualities and some of these traits as far as thinking, your chances of success are far greater. So tell us a little bit about you and, you know, paint the picture so people who are living out there who maybe have gone through some tough times or maybe in a difficult situation can say, all right, I can identify with that guy.
Well, if you've been, if you're broke, sick, unhealthy, unhappy, then you can identify with me. I started as a minimum wage dishwasher. I was in law, in trouble with the law, as you mentioned. I was in jail when I was 15 years old for armed robbery. I got out of that, you know, and kind of said, okay, I'm gonna turn my life around. I'm gonna work hard and play by the rules and do the right things because I want to make my life over. But at 30-something, I was still broke, and I didn't go to college. So, you know, at that point, I'd started as a minimum wage dishwasher and worked my way up to a cook and then waiter and manager trainee, and then I was a restaurant manager, and I was making less money as a manager than I used to make when I was a waiter. And I thought, well, I need to own my own restaurant. That must be the American dream, you know, be your own boss. And I scrimped and saved and borrowed and leased a restaurant with a partner and ended up getting that seized by the IRS, and they auctioned that off at the courthouse. So there I was, about $55,000 in debt. That's back when $55,000 was a lot of money.
Right.
And sold my furniture, had no house, no car, no job, no money, just sleeping on the floor, eating macaroni and cheese three times a day. And I don't mean Kraft, the good stuff.
It was that bad.
because Kraft was three boxes for a dollar, and the supermarket brand was four boxes for a dollar. So for a dollar, I could get four meals. So I was eating that literally every meal every day and just said, you know what? I don't want to live like this anymore. I just, something has to change. My relationships are shot. My health is shot. I'm sleeping on the floor. I'm eating macaroni and cheese every day. I've got to make a change. And the choice was, frankly, kill myself, which don't think I didn't think very seriously about it, which I did, but I fortunately didn't have the guts to do that, or change. And I think we all, not all, but many of us get to those points in life where the pain of the change is greater or the pain of losing is greater. So it's either the pain of losing is so greater that you're willing to change, or the pain of change is just too much, so you're willing to stay back and lose. And I didn't want to lose anymore. And I began a study of prosperity. That was more than 20 years ago. And I just worked on the tirelessly on the science of prosperity, stuff from 100 years ago from the Charles Fillmore and Ernest Holmes, and stuff 50 years ago from Napoleon Hill and Carnegie and those people, and even spiritual principles that I think are thousands of years old. And you say, okay, how do they apply today in the real world today, in the day-to-day existence we have today, how do they apply? And that's really what my work is about today.
And I think it's great because, you know, sometimes you'll talk to someone and they haven't gone through the trials and tribulations, and yours are pretty extreme. To get where they've gone. So it doesn't necessarily resonate with people as well. I mean, many people have, but, you know, you hear a lot of people's story with they, I mean, that's pretty extreme. You know, so not to minimize what you've done by saying, well, if you can do it, anyone can do it. I don't mean it that way, but I mean it that listen to what the man is telling you. I mean, to go through some of these things, you know, if you can turn that around, that's pretty impressive. Here's one of the things that I think is absolutely spectacular when we talk about kind of programming for success. It's this. You could take me on a world championship football team, and I could get coached by the greatest guys, the greatest players, and I am not going to be a professional football player. I know that. You can take me out there. I don't have the physical attributes to do it. You know, I could be standing around all these guys. It's just not, I just don't have those physical skills to be able to do it. So, but boy, would I be mad if I didn't go that route. Okay, but seriously, but now we look at this, and I believe anyone who's got the willingness to really listen and to really, you know, take it upon themselves to change can do it. And that's what I love about this kinds of stuff, because I think that it's all within us. And the first key is kind of saying, you know what, I need to do something. It's exactly what you just said. I need to kind of wake up and make a decision. Now, here's the scary thing, and I want your thoughts on this. Here's the scary thing. I think many people will walk up to that mirror and they will say, just like you did, all right, something's got to give here. Either I've got to go kill myself, which hopefully people won't make that choice, or I am going to have to do something dramatically different. Now, I think for some people, and I'm, you know, unfortunately, I might even have to say for many people, they look at themselves in the mirror. Maybe they don't go so far as to kill themselves, but they just say, I need to change, but I'm not going to do it, and I'm going to accept a life of mediocrity or misery. And then from that moment on, you know, they know. They made a conscious choice, and they know, and they gave into it. Fortunately, you, and I know many other people, have taken the other road. What would you say to the people, and I know there's a lot of people out there, that have looked themselves in the mirror and said, you know what, this is just something I just can't do. I just don't, I'm afraid, and fear, which is an enormous motivator, just gets in the way. You know, that's a critical point, I think, for people. And sometimes they just don't have someone or something there to get them over that hump. What would you say?
I would say you can do it. Will trumps skill every time. The power of the will. When you make up your mind, when you study the stuff that I've studied, the stuff from Hill, from Carnegie, from Fillmore, from Ernest Holmes, you understand it's all about the power of the mind. It's not about the skill. It isn't, because there, you know, Carnegie did steal, and Napoleon Hill assembled this philosophy of getting rich, and Charles Fillmore started the Unity Church, and Ernest Holmes started Science of Mind, and, you know, Henry Ford did the automobile, and Harvey Firestone did tires, and many of them picked businesses that no one else was creating wealth in, and they created wealth because they harnessed the power of their mind. And once you really harness the power of your mind, it's amazing what's possible. So, and know that there's help out there. That's why I do the work I do. I've got an e-zine, I've got a blog, I've got all, you say, well, I don't have money to buy all your books, Randy. You don't have to. Go to the library. My books are in the library. Go to randygage.com, and my website, the blog is free, and the e-zine is free, and there's all kind of things out there that can help you harness the power of your own mind to find this information and learn how, and you just go incremental and you go step by step. And I didn't go overnight from sleeping on the floor to becoming a multimillionaire, but you change by degrees. And every time you change your thinking a little bit, you change your results. And
absolutely.
Then you go from addition to multiplication to exponential growth, because you're building on a stronger foundation each time. So as long as you're, you know, my whole thing is I do self-development still every day. I'm 51 years old at this point, and every day I'm working on me. Every morning I spend time in self-development, reading books, listening to CDs, doing something for my mind, body, and soul.
That's...
And here's the other thing. I hope nobody listening thinks that I have just got everything figured out and I know everything about everything. I'm just a simple guy who was born in Madison, Wisconsin, who's figured out some of this stuff. And I'm ahead of some of you guys listening, and I'm behind some of you guys listening. But I'm working on me every day, and I've found some things that work. So I'm an open book. I share, hey, here's what I did that worked. Or, hey, here's what I did that didn't work. Here's the mistakes I made. I mean, I made so many mistakes along the way. But I think here would be the most important thing I would tell everybody listening is failure is not the opposite of success. Failure is mediocrity is the opposite of success. Failure is just part of the success process. That's anybody who succeeds failed many times along the way, and we use the failures as challenges, as stepping stones. We use the failure. How many times did Edison fail?
Yeah.
Firestone, all those people. We just used the failures as learning lessons. So Edison learned the 10,000 ways that, you know, the incandescent light bulb didn't work until he got to the one that worked. And I learned lots of failures on how not to be rich that ultimately taught me how to be rich. So remember, failure is not the opposite of success. Mediocrity is. And don't anybody listening to this show live a life of mediocrity. You're better than that. You deserve more than that.
Absolutely. And your point is, it's again, like you said, you studied Napoleon Hill and all these people. This is not this brand new concept. And, you know, you humbly put it, which I enjoy hearing people say this, and I think that's a true testimony to the success you've achieved, is you didn't get to a point and say, I got it. This is it. I'm done. It's a constant work in progress. One of the things that maybe the listeners on this show have heard, I've been through this, I'm going through this weightlifting regimen where I decided to get real serious about getting into shape. You know, I'm in my 40s, and my goal was to get back into the shape when I was in my 20s. So I went out, I hired a professional trainer, bodybuilder, and it's funny because I'll see him doing some of his exercises. And this guy is enormous. I mean, this guy was an ex-professional bodybuilder. And he's doing on his own free time, he's doing exactly what he's training me to do. It's not like he just sits there and the muscle gods come over and, you know, say, all right, well, today we're going to, he does the exact same thing, which, you know, I mean, it's like people, you know, listen to what Randy's telling you. He's achieved, success. I would argue, you know, he humbly put it that, you know, ahead of some, I would argue that maybe it's ahead of many. You still, this is an interesting thing. I caught Rocky. It was on one of the TV stations a couple weeks back. So about like 5 minutes of it. And, it was the first one, I believe. And he's getting knocked to the ground. His face looks like bludgeoned with a hammer. And he gets up and he turns around and he says to Mick, his trainer, he goes, that's it. I'm not hitting that ground anymore. I missed that. I was a little kid when I saw that movie. And I missed that. It went over my head. But that resonated with me. And I thought to myself, it's exactly what you're talking about. You know, each time you hit that mat, you could call that failure, right? I mean, you're in a spot you really don't want to be. You want the other guy on the mat. But he just got up and said, dusted himself off, and, you know, I'm going to go at it again. I think your point is well taken, and here's the thing that I would throw out there, and I want to get your thoughts on this. The hardest thing to do is, I'll use the Rocky analogy, when you're getting hit in the face and you want to go to the ground and you don't want to get up, that's when the message, that's really when you need to have that programmed into your mind and say, all right, I expected this to be hard. You should expect it to be hard. It is hard. I expected this to be hard, but that doesn't mean it can't be done. That doesn't mean I'm going to quit. That doesn't mean that failure has to be defined, the way other people define it. And I want to talk about that, too. Actually, that's probably a good lead-in. When we talk about failure, and when we talk about some of the pressures, or pressure isn't even really as much as it is, I think that we're taught, kind of a specific way to think. That's my sense, anyway. I mean, it could just be one man's thing, but I think that a lot of people have this, as you called it, the mind virus, but don't even know. and just kind of walk through life and don't understand. So my question to you is, how would somebody recognize if they've got a mindset that's not working to the best that it could work for them?
Very simple. What's the result you're producing? Because we're supposed to be healthy, happy, and prosperous. And if you're not manifesting prosperity in all your areas, not just money, but your health, your relationship, the spiritual connection, everything, if you're not living a happy life, then you're not allowing yourself to. Dan Millman, in his book, Everyday Enlightenment, which is a great book, he says, every day you answer the question, something that I'm paraphrasing, but some of the fact is, how great am I willing to let it be today? And most people don't allow it to be great, or, say the question is, how much abundance am I willing to accept today? And most people don't, because they have self-worth issues. Not self-esteem, because that goes up and down with every little thing that happens. But self-worth is actually what you believe you're worth. And if I look back at prosperity issues, what I see is 99 out of 100 are self-worth issues, where people don't think they're worthy of prosperity. And that's when you sabotage yourself.
Absolutely.
So if you're not manifesting, if you're not seeing the results, then for sure you've got mind viruses there.
Absolutely. I coined this, actually, it's in my audio series, and I was fortunate enough, I've been invited to in January to speak at a wealth symposium in New York. And one of the things I talk about is I hope this won't happen at the wealth symposium. I can't think of the name of it, the wealth thermometer. And what I call that is, it's just like a regular thermometer in your house, where your home, let's say you've got it set for 70 degrees. Well, your furnace will kick on whenever it drops below 70 degrees, and it'll shut off whenever it goes on. It's programmed for that. Well, I think we all have these wealth thermometers, and it's an internal thing where we say, all right, well, I'm worth $30,000 a year, I'm worth $50,000 a year, I'm worth $700 a week, I'm worth whatever. And anything beyond that, we shut off. And I've seen many, many people do it. I knew someone who was a painter, and he said, here's what I do. He goes, I work my butt off during painting season, and I take the rest of the winter off. And, maybe he wanted to do that because he wanted to take the time off, but there was, another aspect to it. Whether he saw it or not, I don't know, but that's what I call it. I call it the wealth thermometer. In your book, Why You're Dumb, Sick, and Broke, How to Get, Smart, Healthy, and Rich, you say that, many people have been brainwashed by, organized religion, government, entertainment, kind of a lot of things that are out there that point to rich people being bad and, kind of anti-prosperity messages. Tell me a little bit more about, what you're specifically referring to, and maybe give some examples.
Yeah, take the data sphere, which is what we're on right now, because here we are live on the radio. Somebody's listening to us in their car, in their house, through the radio waves that Mark Coney worked on, right? But if we look at the media, TV, radio, the internet, all of the what I call the data sphere, we're being programmed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with these mind viruses. And three of the most popular: our money is bad, rich people are evil, and it's spiritual to be poor. And we can look at movies and TV shows. If you take, I always said Titanic was the most evil movie ever made, because that was programming you on 150 different levels, that money was bad, rich people were evil. And, of course, it became the most popular movie of all time. And, let's look at that. I mean, to give you an example. We start with the movie and we meet little Leonardo, right? He wins the cruise on a card game, right? Because he's just a happy-go-lucky guy. Because we learn that poor people are happy-go-lucky people. And then we meet Rose, and Rose is very unhappy because her mother's telling her, you got to marry the rich guy. You got to suck this up, Rose. You got to do this for the family. So we learn, you got to sell your soul for money. we go forward in the movie, and remember, she's in the first-class dining cabin, and the ladies are wearing white lace gloves, and these boring rich people are talking about polo matches and sifting brandy and smoking cigars. And then Leonardo comes along and says, "Hey, Mamacita, come on down to third class." Not even second class, remember, it was third class. "Let me show you how to party." And we go down to the third class, and they're singing and they're dancing, and we got joy and fun and seasons in the sun and sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And you know, we learn, wow, rich people are boring, poor people are happy, poor people are nice. What's the subconscious programming in all this?
Sure.
The ship gets to iceberg, and what happens? The rich people are rowing off in the sunset, and the poor people are chained up downstairs like animals. We get to the end of the movie, right? Rose is now, 180 years old. She's got her granddaughter who's been working her fingers to the bone, taking care of this old bag, right? She's got this necklace that's probably worth $40 million that she could give to her granddaughter and set her up for life. What does she do? She feeds it to the sharks.
Right.
Level after level after level, this movie programs you with those mind viruses. And it ended up doing just $2 billion, the most popular movie of all since the Earth's crust cooled, right? Now, of course, the irony of this is Jim Cameron made 10% of that movie. So he made $200 million teaching us it's spiritual to be poor. Now, of course, that's no longer the best, highest grossing movie of all time. It's been, knocked off the perch by Avatar, which is his latest movie. And, of course, what's the subliminal programming in this movie? The same exact thing. We've got the evil, greedy corporation which wants to go to this planet and rape and pillage and plunder this indigenous people because they want to make money. We've got the Marine the guy's paralyzed. He's in a wheelchair. And we learn early in the show that he could walk if he just had more money. And they tell him, "Well, if you go and do this for us, I'll give you your legs back," the guy tells him. So we learn that, here these rich people are going to let this poor guy walk again if he'll help go plunder these indigenous people. We go back to Aliens, his first movie. What was the theme of Aliens? It was this evil, greedy corporation and the guy who was going to bring back this monster because of all the money the corporation would work. And we can look at the TV shows, the books on the New York Times bestseller list. I could just tell you, and it won't matter what generation, we can go back to the 70s, the 50s, the 80s, whether it's Dallas and Dynasty and Melrose Place. We can go to popular shows today like House. No matter what generation you're from, show me the mass pop culture. And I can show you, that's really what that book, Dumb, Sick, and Broken, How to Be Smart, Healthy, and Rich, I did a lot of work in that book about the mind viruses in the data sphere, in the shows, and people are simply shocked when they realize they're being programmed with all this stuff 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
That's, you know what, Randy, that's excellent. I've done quite a bit of work, similar kinds of things with the media, of course, and I'm now part of that, but I like to think I deliver a different message.
I'd like to think you and I are right now spreading positive.
Absolutely, right. That's exactly right. But it's interesting that you talk about Titanic because I've seen the movie and I saw it, but I didn't really think about it on the level you're talking about. I mean, yeah, it was there. It was pretty blatantly obvious, but I didn't really sit down and really analyze it the way you are. And I think that that's dynamite. That is just an excellent, excellent example. And, it's interesting too. I've got little kids and you watch some of these cartoons that they watch and it's the same kind of thing. It's just this subliminal kind of thing. Here's an interesting thing that I think is worth talking about. And,
well, Mark, before you go to that, let's not gloss over something you just said about the little kids. I think your core foundational beliefs, which are caused by these mind viruses, right, which cause you to take all the actions, to make all your choices, I would suggest that our core foundational beliefs about money, marriage, relationship, health, all of the important things in life are determined before we're 10 years old. And this, the cartoons, the games, the TV, the books, the movies, the atmosphere, even the school teachers, that's the Mind Viruses program. So that's all done before we're even 10 years old.
Yeah.
So now you're 55 years old, or you're 45 years old, or you're 65 years old. You wonder why your marriage isn't working, or why you're manifesting ill health, or why you're unhappy. And you don't realize it's stuff that you learned at a subconscious level when you were 5, 6, 7 years old.
Yeah. Absolutely. And there's so many different factors where it's hitting us, you know, 24/7, TV, now computers, you know, is the other thing. Other kids, other families. It runs the gamut. And, you know, one of the things that I think is really an important part, it's an important part of my fiber. It's not an important part of everybody's, but it's something I'll throw out there, is humility. And I never really gave that its due when I was younger at all. I used to be involved in competitive martial arts. I used to compete when I was, you know, in my early 20s, and I enjoyed some success. And my attitude was always, well, if you're good, you should show it. And it was just, when I look back now, I don't know how anyone could possibly take me, to be honest with you. You know, it's probably like, oh, here comes that guy. But I get it now. And, you know, you alluded to it before when you talked about, you know, here's some things that you've learned, and, you know, take it if you want. I think that, you know, along this message here that would be, you know, maybe it'll help some people, is, you know, humility is a real powerful thing, because in my opinion, getting rich and being healthy and smart and all these things that you talk about, if you want to stay grounded, you know, being humble is huge. Quick story. I was fortunate when I was younger. I had some pretty impressive mentors when I used to be a professional stock and commodities trader, which, by the way, to get good at that is how I ended up getting into the world of behavioral finance, because, you know, there's mental clutter in there, and in order to be good at it, you really need to get rid of that. So that's what set me on that path. But what was interesting was one of the mentors that I had in particular, very wealthy guy, but you wouldn't know it. You would not know it at all. Didn't dress, you know, to the nines. Didn't drive, you know, expensive cars. Nothing wrong with that. That's, you know, a lot of people do that. But that just wasn't him. He was basically just the guy he was. Those things weren't important to him. And he wasn't out to show the world that he was, you know, success by showing off. And again, and I want to be careful how I make this point. Having nice things doesn't necessarily mean you're showing off. It doesn't mean that at all. If that's what you want, and that's...
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, and that's what
that's
you want. Yeah, and that's what you want, and that's who you are. Great. I'm a huge fan of it. Having those things only to kind of rub it in someone, then you're kind of living a different life, right? You know, it's kind of like, well, you know, I'm driving this car because I'm successful, you know, and it's not an offshoot. Sometimes it's a little difficult to explain, but I guess the point is, be who you are, and if being who you are includes having nice things, then that's great. Then you're being who you are. It's when you start to become who you're not that I think you're not really grasping prosperity. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, here's what I would say. Money and things is not prosperity. And poverty is not an absence of money and things. Now, can money and things be a part of prosperity? Yes, absolutely. But money and things in and of themselves, they're not what make you happy. I think what makes us happy is the self-expression they do for us.
Yes.
Like cars. Take cars. I love cars. So I've got a couple of the retro Challengers, the limited editions that Dodge came up with. I've got an Aston Martin convertible. I've got a Viper convertible. I've got another Viper with a supercharger that, you know, is pulling 729 horsepower.
Those are nice cars. One of my neighbors has one of those. Nice car.
Oh, just sitting still, it looks like it's going 200 miles an hour. It's poetry in motion. Because I like cars. That was something I always wanted to do when I was a kid. I loved muscle cars. I always wanted to have exotic cars, and I didn't have the money. So now that I have the money, I express myself with those cars. You talk about clothes. Interesting. I've got a picture that I'm looking at right now. Me with a billionaire. Who was the guy I wanted to meet? We had lunch together, took a picture together. You look at that picture, and if you said, okay, which of those guys is the billionaire? I'm in this beautiful, bespoke $10,000 suit.
Right.
He's wearing the cheapest suit you can. Because that isn't important to him. He just clothes on his thing, right? But I love fashion. I love, I've got a walk-in closet just with shoes. I've got a walk-in closet just with suits because I love that, right? That's an expression of me. Now, there's people listening that cars aren't their thing or fashion isn't their thing, and their thing would be, having 500 acres out there in the wilderness,
right,
and having a log cabin and whatever it means to you. I'm a tropical guy, so I'm palm trees and coconuts and mangoes in Miami. There's people listening, their thing is going to be a ski lodge in Switzerland.
Exactly. That's
the expression.
That's a great way to put it. I'm glad you put it that way, because that's an expression. That's really it. In my example, it's kind of like the Trump and, Warren Buffett. For example, two very wealthy guys. Trump is Trump. I like that, actually. But I also like the Warren Buffett mentality too. So, I guess the point is, be who you are. When you let money change who you are, that's given money a lot of power, as opposed to when you change and then the money starts coming in. Different story, and I think sometimes people might put the cart first. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think money doesn't really change people. I think money reveals people.
Good way to put it.
If you're a jerk, you're going to be a rich jerk. If you're a nice person, you're going to be a rich, nice person. And all money does is reveal that, who you really are.
yeah, and I think the way you put that earlier is really it's well expressed, that it's an expression of yourself, that having nice things and doing basically just having nice things, if you're true to yourself and it's an expression of who you are, then that's the best thing that I think anyone could ask for. Like you said, for some people it's cars, for some people it's shoes, for some people it's charities, for some people it's something else. So it's, I guess the point I'm making here is, people say, well, maybe on one level they think, well, it's not good to be rich. And if that's for whatever reason someone thinks that, there's no reason in the world, and this, I'm throwing this out there, there's no reason in the world someone can't attain tremendous amount of wealth and then spread it around and give it to people, right? I mean, that's.
I give away millions of dollars to charity. I have so many charities I support. I'm looking at a beautiful thing the opera just sent me as a thank you gift, because I gave $100,000 to produce Don Giovanni, okay? And every opera performance, we have all the school kids and people we give tickets to and bring that beautiful music to people around the world. And whether it's the Make-A-Wish Foundation or helping save the rainforest, the money I give to my church, I mean, we're able to do wonderful things with money. And people are going to say, well, money doesn't buy happiness. That's true. But I would also submit poverty doesn't buy happiness either.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And, one of the things, and you mentioned this and we kind of glossed over it a little bit, earlier in the, in the show. And I want to just go back to that again, especially since we've kind of, progressed a little bit here. You yourself didn't, start off on the paths to riches. I mean, if anything, it sounds like if someone stopped your life at, 15, 16 years old and said, all right, let's forecast where this guy's going to end up, Even yourself probably didn't envision what you're seeing or what you're experiencing now. So I want to talk a little bit about that, is our own vision that people have in their minds and how important that is and creating it. And tell me a little bit about yours, the ability to kind of see the picture, the healthy person, the smart person, the rich person, I think is an important, guideline for people so that they can get there. You got an opinion on that?
Absolutely. Even when I was in jail at 15 years old, I was telling people, I'm going to be a millionaire by the time I'm 35 years old. Because I hated being poor. It's funny, I'll watch somebody on TV and they'll say, well, we were poor and we didn't know it. And I always think, what are you, a moron?
Right.
I was poor and I knew it. I hated it. I knew other kids had go-karts and mini bikes and new bikes and cool vacations, and their families lived in big houses and drove nice cars, and my family had old cars and a little apartment, and we all shared bedrooms, and right, so I knew it. And I always said, I'm going to be a millionaire by the time I was 35 years old. And when did I become a millionaire? At 35 years old. Now, of course, immediately I said, well, why didn't I say 25?
I know, right?
Of course, I didn't understand the power of the mind then. Now, at 15, I had no idea how I would be a millionaire. I had not a clue. And if you, like you just said, if you had looked at me, you would have said, what a delusional idiot this kid is. I mean, he's going to end up dead in prison somewhere. But because I held that vision of something greater, I was able to manifest it, because that was a mind virus that I had programmed myself with in my subconscious mind, not even knowing. It wasn't something that I was consciously doing, but that's actually what I did, is I programmed myself with the mind virus that I would be a millionaire by the time I was 35 years old. And that's exactly what happened.
You know, one of the things that it seems to be a recurring theme that I find people, they experience is someone's listening to this show, right? And they say, all right, I'm juiced, I'm amped, I get it, I've heard this message maybe before, and, I've just lost motivation along the way. For whatever reason, I got knocked off the ball, and I lost my motivation. What would you say to people who are out there listening that say, all right, I buy into it, but I don't know what to do. I'm filled with all this enthusiasm and energy, and I'm running around in circles, and I'm excited, and I want to do something, but I don't know how to channel it, and I don't know what to do. What would you say to those people?
Daily self-development. Take some time in the morning. Expose yourself to positive ideas, positive people. I have a YouTube channel, a Prosperity TV channel, and anybody just go to YouTube.com/Randy Gage. I have, couple dozen videos on there. I'm adding to them every day, not every day, but, every week or two, I'm usually adding another video. And expose yourself to that kind of programming. Read books like Think and Grow Rich and As a Man Think It. The fact that you're listening to Mark's show, make sure you tune into this each week. Get yourself exposed to people who think, because remember what Jim Rohn said, you're going to be the average income of the five people you spend the most time with. And you say, well, geez, all my friends are broke, and I'm married to a negative person, and I've got a dead-end job and a cheap boss. Well, you can still change your environment by the power of the Internet, by the power of books, by the power of CDs. Instead of listening to garbage in your car, you could be listening to this radio show. You could be listening to positive CDs from Jim Rohn or somebody. You can, and of course, there's scientific research now. If you look at what Dr. Bruce Lipton and some of these people in epigenetics are doing, they're talking about how cells can be influenced by the environment, that we're not victims of our DNA. And if we change our environment, we change our actual cellular structure, and we'll change the results that we manifest. And we can do that if we control our own programming. So that's what I would tell everybody listening.
All right, man. Hey, Randy, what phenomenal, it's not just the message, because the message is one thing, but the way in which you deliver the message, I think, is equally as important as the message itself. So, I thoroughly enjoy this topic. Great to listen to someone like yourself take some time out of your day and share it with all of us. I know on behalf of certainly myself and all the listeners out there, I think I could speak for. Great, great message, great way you deliver it, and really appreciate the insights. When we do another topic, I'd certainly love to get you back if you're your schedule will allow and have you back on the show. You made for a great guest, and we really appreciate it.
Well, Mark, thanks for the work you do. Thanks for having me on the show, and thanks, everybody, for tuning in. It's great to chat with everybody.
Well, it's great. We appreciate it. But don't go anywhere. I want to chat with you when we close up here. But, hey, people, we're just about out of time here, unfortunately. Wish we had more time. But you've been listening to Your Money Matters. And, again, I am your host, Mark Perlman. Show's heard in up to 19 states as well as worldwide, thanks to iTunes. And we had prosperity expert Randy Gage on the horn with us. And, again, if you missed any part of this show, you can go visit yourmoneymattersradio.com and listen to it in its entirety. And you can get all kinds of information about Randy as well. So, again, a great show and a great guest. But make sure you stick around because Alan Combs, he's going to be coming up next and doing his thing. But until next week, I'm your host, Mark Perlman. Thanks for listening and have a prosperous week.
You've been listening to Your Money Matters. Mark Perlman is a registered representative of and offers securities through Securities America Incorporated, member FINRA and SIPC. Join host Mark Perlman next Sunday at 7 p.m. for another edition on KB 1520. For more information about upcoming shows, please go to yourmoneymattersradio.com. For more information about your host, Mark, please go to markperlman.com or call 631-3232. Securities America is a firm, does not make a market in, conduct research on, or recommend the purchase or sale of any of the securities that may be mentioned in the broadcast. Information on this broadcast is for informational use only and should not be considered financial, tax, or legal advice. Please consult a qualified professional for specifics on your situation.